Case 83830, Hillebrew versus Donahue. Counsel, ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
Good morning, Chief Justice Stiglitz. May it please the Court, Dan Pulsenberg for the appellants. This case raises important and interesting issues about separation of powers. The legislature versus the executive, even the legislature versus the judicial. Our story starts in 1993 when the Nevada legislature passed three statutes. One was 322-100, where it said when the registrar is going to set fees for the use of state land, it has to set fees it determines to be reasonable based on the fair market value of the use. It also passed 110, which set out an actual schedule for use of land for agricultural, commercial, and all other uses. And 120, which is at issue here, where it set out schedules of fees for peers and boys. In 2017, the agency itself came to the legislature with a proposal to change some of that. They set out that under 110 for use of land and 120 for peers and boys, that the agency should, by regulation, set the fees. Now, here's the problem. When the agency set the fees, they didn't follow the direction that they were supposed to follow, because under Section 100, the registrar has to determine fees based on fair market value.
But counsel, does it say that that's the sole method by which you can reach that analysis,
or
is that just saying that you have to, at a minimum, consider that? Because my understanding is they went through several different methodologies to.
They picked up five methodologies. None of them can appropriately considered fair market value. So do they have to? I know they give me grief in the brief for us saying solely based on fair market value, but it doesn't say in your considerations include, among other things, fair market value. So that's what this court has to determine.
But it says reasonable based upon fair market value.
Determined to be reasonable based on fair market value, yes. So they have to make a determination based on the fair market value of the use.
So does it get overturned if it's anything other than what you think the exact correct fair market value is?
We did not propose an exact correct fair market value. What
right.
we did was challenge their methods because they didn't consider fair market value of the use.
So if their ultimate determination is less than fair market value, such that, I mean, if anybody was prejudiced, it wasn't the appellants here. How does that affect things?
If the agency considers that it's less, then I suppose they can reconsider and increase them. But they still have to do it based on a methodology that considers the fair market value of the use of the land, and they have to use that to determine the fee. Here are the five factors that they considered. First, they said that they were going to look at the methodologies that the legislature established for the original fees that it set out. But it didn't use that. Because it said that it couldn't figure out what the methodology was for the fair market value that the legislature used. But if you're going to consider an increase in fees, wouldn't you at least start with the existing fees? And here, you know, inflation over 25 years, you could probably double the fees to account for that. Here they increase fees by a factor of...
What methodology would you say you double it? For 25 years, you probably double it. Like, what's the methodology for your suggestion that doubling it would be appropriate?
Well, because doubling would account to, under the Department of Labor, the inflation for the 25 years from 1993 to 2017.
That's not a determination of fair market value.
No, it isn't. So they didn't consider, that was the first factor they looked at, they rejected it. The second factor they looked at is in a comparative analysis in other Western states. Remember, they represented to the legislature that our fees were lower than other Western states. Well, once they did a real analysis of it, it turned out to be higher. Washington doesn't charge fees at all for residential peers. Oregon does it based on square footage. So all they looked at, instead of that methodology, was
California. Would it on square footage be less?
Well, they didn't base it on square footage. Well, and that's one of the arguments that we make.
But I thought you just said that what the agency did here ended up being more than other states. So that's my question.
No, our rates already from 1993 were higher than other states. Washington.
So the other state that was basing it on square footage was coming to a calculation that was less than our current.
Well, my point being is that they didn't actually base it on.
So is that yes or no?
I can't tell you what the Oregon calculation was. I can tell you the California calculation came to 79 cents a square foot. But the peers, and this is a later fact.
And why is square footage relevant?
Because our problem was that it was a uniform fee. Irrespective of whether your pier goes 1 inch into submerged state land or 20 feet. So it isn't really based on fair market value of the use in each instance. We also said that it shouldn't be the same across the state.
Is there evidence that the fair market value would be substantially different for a shorter pier than a longer pier?
It should be.
Is there evidence in the record that I can look at that shows it would be a different fair market value for a 50-foot pier than a 100-foot pier?
Well, we cover that in the brief, but I think that's intuitive, that if you're using 50 feet of state land versus an inch of state land, that the fair market value of that use would be more.
But, Mr. Paulsenberg, when the legislature was the body setting the fees, wasn't it a consistent fee?
It was a uniform fee. And I don't have a problem with that because that's the legislature. They were exercising the legislative function there. If they're just sending it over to the state sending it to an agency, the agency has to follow directives. And by going off into by not looking, they could have done a schedule. If your pier is this long, the factor could be a certain amount. But the fundamental problem I have, and I can see the way we're using time, I'm going to have to jump ahead. Fundamental problem I have is they weren't looking at the fair market value of the use. They were looking at the fair market value of the pier. They were looking at the rental for the pier. They were looking at how a pier may.
Isn't the pier the use? That's what they're being charged for, to have a pier out in Lake Tahoe. That's the use.
They're being charged to use the submerged state land. The pier itself isn't the value of the land. So when
But it doesn't say the value of the land. It says the value of the use.
Exactly. That's my point. The use of the land isn't. So if I build a pier, the state is not entitled to set a fee based on the pier itself, especially when part of that pier is on private land.
So I apologize. I have a couple, I hope, quick questions I want to try to get through.
And I hope I have a quick answer.
So you've been arguing that under the statutory provision that it's got to be based on the fair market value, and you argue that this was not. I get that argument, okay? Are you arguing that there is an unconstitutionality, that it violates the Constitution?
I am. If their argument is, and remember, before the district court, they represented that their calculations were based on the fair market value of use. Judge Breslow seems to have just been doing it based on reasonableness under Section 120. I think that is an unconstitutional delegation of authority.
Okay, I appreciate that.
I also have real problems with the way the statute works. So the agency goes to the legislature and says, give us the authority to change the fees, statutory fees, by regulation. They brag that this passes Article 4, Section 18 because that passed by 2/3. The problem is all the legislators voted for was just let's have it set by regulation.
Have you raised the 2/3 issue on this appeal?
No, but they have raised it.
So no was good. Thank you. Are all of these appellants all of their properties and items that they might be charged for all at Lake Tahoe?
Yes.
And are they all residential?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
So, but your second question seems to be going to whether we have standing to raise the commercial rights. I think we do, and they raise that we don't. I think we do because, remember, I listed all the different statutes at the beginning. Some of these had to do with just commercial, agricultural, and other uses of land. We didn't challenge those. We didn't challenge everything out of the statute. We only challenged the regulation that resulted in 322.195, which was all done by the same methodology. So I think all of that's problems. They raised the public trust doctrine. And I don't think that applies here. They're using this as the justification for what they did, because under 322.160, all the money over and above the $65,000 that would normally go to the general fund goes to the registrar to fund projects for Lake Tahoe. Well, I don't doubt their good intentions, but broad is the gate and easy the road to destruction. And it's paved with good intentions. So what we have here is a way to just generate additional funds to go to a certain purpose. I don't have a problem with the certain purpose, but this really should have been done through the legislature. The other constitutional issue we raise is that the Legislative Commission says that this court should give it deference. Well, this is the same thing I'm talking about before. If they can pass things vaguely and have it come back through the Legislative Commission, they can't escape this court's review of whether they're founded on proper statutory provisions. And at 3 minutes, I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Polzenberg.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Newbell?
Yes, Newbell.
All right, Newbell.
May it please the court, Daniel Newbell, representing the State of Nevada Division of State Lands. $750 annually for a permit to use a pier on public land on Lake Tahoe, a pier which, according to a Nevada certified appraiser, increases the appellant's property value by more than $1 million. That's what brings us here today. Appellants, all of whom own lakefront property on Lake Tahoe, contend that the state should charge only a nominal fee for their use of that land. A nominal fee meaning basically nothing for them to encumber the public's land with a pier. Even if the division wanted to, it couldn't give the appellants the nominal fee that they seek. The public trust doctrine requires the state to serve as the trustee for the state's land. Giving the appellants a nominal fee would not benefit the public. It would only benefit the appellants. Instead, the Division of State Lands set a reasonable fee for the use of these lands in the amount of $750 per year that will go towards the benefit of the public and the appellants, because it will be used to preserve and protect the lake for this generation and future generations.
Council, was that done in conformity with the statute saying that you have to base the fee on the fair market value of use? If you have one uniform fee across the board, how can that be reconciled with use unless there was some kind of average done? If you can just address that argument since council focused on that.
Absolutely, and I would contend that NRS 322.120, which is the statute that the legislature actually changed when it passed SB 512 back in 2017. The plain language of it says that, and I'll quote it, the statute says that the division shall charge a fee, an unamount established by regulation. It doesn't say a calculation or a method. It says a fee, an unamount established by regulation. The plain language of that statute, at the very least, there is a very plausible argument and interpretation that it allows for a uniform fee. And in fact, that is how the legislature has always set this fee in Nevada, was on a uniform basis. And when you look at it, 96% of the piers that we're talking about are located in Lake Tahoe. Those are the only challengers that we have here. And so the uses are comparable for all of the appellants or the permittees that are paying the fee. One of the things that was discussed with appellant's counsel is a square footage calculation, and he says it's intuitive that it would be more money, more state land that you occupy. But actually, one of the things that's talked about in the appraisal is what's valuable about the pier is that it's serviceable, meaning that you can use it for recreation. You can use it to fish. You can use it to dock your boat. It's about how deep the land goes underneath. And in some parts of the lake, it's going to go down very quickly. And so maybe you only have to go 10 feet onto state land. In other parts of the lake, maybe you have to go 40 feet to get to that same area. But if, let's just say, state lands had done it the other way and said square footage, we could be here and they could make the argument, well, a 40-foot pier isn't inherently worth four times more than a 10-foot pier because they're getting the same value for the use, which is they get to do the things that you want to do by building a pier with that fee. And so I think that the statute does inherently contemplate the setting of a uniform fee in this aspect.
And still comply with the fair market value of use portion of this. Because I understand the fee was uniform before, but the legislature wasn't tethered to this fair market value of use language that now we're contending with in the statute. So you're saying they can coexist, that you can do both. One does, they're not mutually exclusive concepts, right? So you can have fair market value of use and still have a uniform fee, is what you're saying.
Yes, and I would say that the argument that we put forward is to read all of these statutes in harmony. The argument that they put forward is to read one portion of one statute, which is fair market value. That's it. They say exclusive. We say 120 talks about the setting of the fees and that they shall be charged for each permit classification on a uniform basis. And then the state land registrar is to use his best judgment to make a determination about what is reasonable based on the fair market value. And a part of deciding what's reasonable relates back to the public trust doctrine, which is built into the state land registrar statutes under NRS 321.0005, and it's also a constitutional mandate. And so the state land registrar, in fact, has to consider things other than fair market value in setting these fees. And what they did here was a reasonable way to look at the average use, the typical use. They looked at what does California charge on the other side of the lake. That is a very typical fair market evaluation for they're the closest entity that does the same thing with permitting and leasing land. And so what do they charge? And it turns out that the average amount charged in California is $1,000. Which is more than the fee that was set here. They also hired an appraiser, which was at the request of public comment, to look at what's the typical value that's received as part of getting a serviceable fee, a serviceable pier, one that goes out long enough. And that said that it's a $12,000 market rent rate for a pier, and that's based on an increase in property value for these individuals that are lucky enough to have a pier on Lake Tahoe for $1 million. It increases
their
property value.
What do you see to counsel's argument that there's this improper delegation of legislative powers? I mean, obviously, the legislator can vest the agency with mere fact-finding authority, but not the authority to legislate. So do you think that setting the fees in the way that it was done is more of a fact-finding purpose than a legislative purpose?
Yes, absolutely. I think that it was done in the proper context. They gave direction to the agency. They said in NRS 322.120, here's the types of permit classifications to look at, to group together. And then with NRS 322.100, here's direction to consider in setting a fee. What do you determine to be reasonable based on fair market value of the use? And what was important to the legislature was that because it had exclusively been the province of the legislature to that point in 2017 to set the fee, they hadn't changed it since the early 90s. Mm-hmm. And so by allowing it to be set in regulation, that provided that in the future we wouldn't have this happen again where, you know, they talk about that it was a $50 fee, and this is 15 times increase. But in reality, when you look at the numbers, it's a $750 annual fee. You can frame it as 1,500% if you want to, but what we're really talking about here is a $750 annual fee. And by having it in regulation with the fact-finding authority of the agency, that can be changed over time to increase this fee to reflect the principles of fair market value and also to consider what's fair to the public under the public trust doctrine.
Counsel, what do you think is the appropriate standard of review? Because there's some dispute on that point.
Certainly, and I believe it would be de novo standard of review here. And there's a few arguments that they make about the Smith case.
Uh-huh. What do you think the standard of review the district court should have applied was?
I think that the standard of review to be applied was the standard that the district court set, which is the actual statute, NRS 233B.110. That is what they brought their challenge under. So that statute asks, does a regulation violate a statute or the agency's statutory authority or a constitutional provision? That is what is applied by...
It seems, however, that our prior jurisprudence may have kind of leaked the idea of arbitrary and capricious into evaluation of agency regulations as opposed to just decisions. So how do we resolve that issue?
Right. And with all due respect to this court, I think there are some lingering questions about that because there's some other case law, and I'll cite to the Washoe County versus Otto case that says that this court has, quote, no inherent appellate jurisdiction over the official acts of administrative agencies except where the legislature has made some statutory provision for judicial review. That case also says that, quote, since jurisdiction is dependent on statutory provisions, the extent of jurisdiction is limited to that conferred by the statute. Other parts of NRS 233B do allow for arbitrary or capricious review, and those are for contested cases. Like if someone's license is revoked by a board, it would allow for arbitrary or capricious review. But this statute, which is a challenge or regulation, does not provide that. And I would suggest that this is a good opportunity for the court to revisit that and decide that arbitrary or capricious review is not provided by that statute and therefore is not part of the review for striking a regulation.
And even though would you then agree with the corollary proposition that the review is non-deferential? We undertake it originally to see whether or not the regulation comports with the statute.
I do agree with that. It is a question of law. Does the regulation violate a statute or a constitutional provision?
Because that goes further than just Otto. We have other cases that talk about deference to agencies in the realm of interpretation. I get it in contested case that you would defer to fact-finding, et cetera, but here the review seems to me to be legal on whether or not what the agency regulation does matches up with what the statute said the agency was to do in promulgating the reg.
Yes, I do agree with that. It is a legal determination, and that's why I think it was ultimately appropriate for summary judgment as well in the district court, is really this is inherently a legal determination to be made by the court and by you all as to whether this regulation that was promulgated that considered a vast amount of data on fair market value and then set a fee that is reasonable in light of that, whether that regulation violates the statutes or the Constitution. And I would submit it does not. It was more than supported by the evidence on the record and by the vast amount of data provided by the agency as part of this review.
So you, on behalf of the state, are not advocating for the view that this court should defer to legislative council bureaus' acceptance of the regulation during the review process provided in 233B?
Sorry, no. I see those as two separate things, which is, one, we're talking about the deference owed to the district court, which I would say that this is a legal determination and therefore there's no deference owed. However, from the agencies that actually implement these laws, they are owed deference, and that is clear with the case law of this court, that agencies, one being here, the Division of State Lands, is owed deference in how they interpret the law. So if it's a reasonable interpretation of the law, then it stands.
Is that appropriate?
I do believe it's appropriate here because they're the ones in charge of implementing the statutes, and there's many cases that cite to it, and they've even admitted to it in their briefings that agencies are entitled to deference in interpreting their statutes, and as long as it's a reasonable or fair reading, then those are entitled to deference and stand. I see that I'm at 3 minutes. I promised LCB some time here. So I would be happy to answer any more questions, but if not, then I would allow Mr. Powers to present.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Powers?
Thank you. For the record, Kevin Powers, LCB Legal General Counsel, on behalf of the Legislative Commission. I want to focus on the standard with regard to the Legislative Commission. The power to review regulations is derived from the Nevada Constitution. It's a fairly unique constitutional provision nationally. It specifically provides the Legislative Commission with the authority to review regulations to determine whether they conform the statutory authority and carry out legislative intent. That is a judicial power. But because it's expressly granted by the Constitution to the Legislative Commission can exercise that judicial power. However, the ballot questions made clear to the voters that it was a shared judicial power. The Legislative Commission would have that initial determination whether they conformed the statutory authority, and then the courts would still have the power to review. But because the Legislative Commission has that constitutional power, the review should not be de novo. It should be deferential to the Legislative Commission, and the Legislative Commission's determination that the regulation complies with statutory authority should be upheld so long as it's reasonable as a matter of law. And in this case, the Legislative Commission's determination that these fees were reasonable as a matter of law is supported by the statutes and in the division's administrative proceedings. Turning to the statutes themselves, NRS 322.120 is the guiding statute here. It says it provides the division with the authority to adopt the fees. The standard that the division has to apply is the public trust doctrine, the three-part test that this court adopted in Lawrence versus Clark County and Mineral County versus Lyon County. In those cases, the court specifically read the public trust doctrine into those statutes, the Fort Mojave Development Law and the Nevada Water Law in NRS Chapter 533. That's what happened here. The legislature is presumed to know the public trust doctrine and to enact this statute based on that presumption. So the standard is the three-part test. Because it's a three-part test, fair market value is not sufficient. The registrar was required to look in addition to the public purpose and the state's special obligation to protect the public trust land. That's also codified in NRS 321.0005, which specifically provides that all state lands under submerged navigable waters only can be used if the use is in the best interest of the residents of the state. If you look at the record below, it's clear that the registrar factored in fair market value, but also factored in several other considerations that go to public purpose and the special public trust obligation that the division has under the public trust doctrine. So because the statute provided the public trust standard and the registrar followed that standard, then the court should affirm and grant deference to the Legislative Commission because its interpretation is reasonable as a matter of law. Thank you. I'm open to any questions.
Thank you, Counsel. Thank you, Mr. Powers.
Let me take those last points first. I don't think you can be deferential to the legislature on an issue of law. Since Marbury versus Madison, we know that it is emphatically the duty of the judicial department to say what the law is. Public trust doctrine, I don't think it applies here. And I think Mineral County was a great explanation of what public trust doctrine is, while the government holds submerged land for the good of the public. What that does is restrict the government's ability to devise, depose, alienate the land. We're not doing that here. We're not doing a land swap. We're not selling the land to a municipality. Our use of the land still, under the public trust doctrine, allows navigation, recreation, commerce, and fishing. There isn't a violation here. Throughout the record, they kept talking about the benefit of the state as opposed to the benefit of the public. What they're saying is charging these exceptionally high prices creates a fund to protect Lake Tahoe. Look, I'm in favor of Lake Tahoe, but you can't really just, and this is, in my opinion, a way to create a real estate tax without actually creating a real estate tax. Here's why. Here's how they used their appraisals. They came in, first they looked at California land, and then they said, oh, look, all the prices are higher in California. All prices are higher in California, and the peers are different. You just can't use that as a basis. Their appraisals looked at the increase in value of the upland parcel. The upland parcel could be increased by $1 million because of the use of the downwater land. Well, no, that's not true. That's not taking into account all the costs involved. And it's looking at, they use the COBOL system. It's looking at the value of the increase
to other land. That's not the fair market value of the use of this land.
What would be, in your estimation, a proper, then, evaluative tool? They said five things they considered in trying to get to this, the proper fee or fair market value.
Right.
Were all five of those bad?
Yes.
Are they missing something? So what would you, so when we send it back, if you're asking us to send
yes.
it back, so if we send it back, we tell the court, those were wrong, you
yes.
should, what?
Have an appraisal of the use of the submerged land, that small little bit of the submerged land, not the way it benefits other parcels. That's what our guy did. Our guy came in and said, really, that there's no market for that land. You know, fair market value.
There's not as much market for your client's properties if they don't have a pier that feeds on the state part of Lake Tahoe.
No, there's still a market for it. It affects the fair market value of the land. But we're not talking about the upland parcel. That's the huge problem I have with this.
Isn't that what... Never mind. Thank you. It's all good.
Unless the court wants to talk about statutes, standards of review.
We'll keep that conversation in the back.
You betcha.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Colzer.
I'll give my vote to Justice Pickering. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your arguments, counsel. This matter will stand submitted.